What we're doing for the next, well, for the past 2 weeks and 7 weeks going forward, is going through the Articles of Faith. There's a copy in the back for anyone who doesn't have the Articles of Faith. We, 2 weeks ago, started with We Believe in One God and had a discussion sermon on that. Thank you very much, Mike. Last week we did We Believe that God has spoken in the Scriptures. We're just letting us think about what does that mean. On the top of today's handout is a verse that reminds us, why do we study the Scriptures? The very top one is from 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, and it says, all Scripture is breathed out by God. Okay, is there any question? Where do Scriptures come from? Are they written by people who had a good idea? I have a lot of good ideas. This isn't from God. Scriptures are from God. They're all breathed out by God. There is no question about that. That's what they are. Secondly, why then should we study the Scriptures? They're profitable for teaching. Huh. Any of us know everything we need to know? Not me. Okay, after I'm taught, do I always do what I'm taught? Nope. So there needs to be a reproof, or some translations will say a rebuke. Hey, Kevin. That's not what I taught you. Anybody remember Mom and Dad saying, that's not the way we raised you? Well, that's what God's saying here in the Scriptures. So there's teaching, there's reproof. Now, once I'm told I messed up, parents ever say that to you guys? No, never. Then there needs to be a correction. Look, let me show you how it should be done. And that's what Scriptures do. They teach us how to be correct. It's not good enough just to tell me I'm wrong. It's important to correct me, show me how it should be done. And then this is for training. Why do I need training? I was with a young fellow who is going into the service a couple weeks ago down in Florida, and he is looking forward to boot camp. If anybody's been in boot camp, you know that he doesn't know what boot camp is. Anyway, this is going to be training for teamwork, protecting this country, doing the things that are necessary in a military lifestyle. And so the training that we get from the Bible is the training that we need so that the man, and we're going to talk about the word man in a moment, of God may be complete and equipped for every good work. Just like in the military, you go through boot camp so you can be complete and equipped to go and do your job. That's what the Bible does. Now, Terry and I have three wonderful sons, Matthew, Mark, and Peter. Now, Matthew, for the last several years, has been having fun with our two grandsons and his wife, Mile and Sebastian. The boys wanted him years ago to start teaching from the Bible. So Matthew isn't an eloquent teacher like Pastor Mike is. So he says, well, look, Dad, I guess the only thing I can do is read the Bible because you've always said that that's good for, you know, training, rebuking, correcting, and training the man of God. So we'll do that. So they've been reading through the Bible. This week, they completed the third time through the Bible, start to finish. You know where he started? Genesis. Why? Because it says in the beginning. He thought that's a good place always to start. Third time through the Bible. Now, guess what? We got these two great grandsons that we were visiting with. One 15, soon to be 16. The other one 14. You know what? It's really fun visiting with them. They like to talk about the Bible. In fact, the 15-year-old did the sermon on Sunday 2 weeks ago. All right, so Scripture is important. So we're going to go back to the beginning. This week, the article of faith that we're dealing with is We Believe that God created Adam and Eve in His image. So on your handout, take a look at the first piece, and that's Genesis. Genesis, of course, being the first book in the Bible. Genesis chapter 1. And in this handout, we're doing the ESV, English Standard Version, similar like we have in the pews. Here's what it says. Then God said, let us. us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Okay, go up to verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Remember I said something about man? Often when the Bible is using man, he's talking about mankind, man and woman. Here, he created him in the image of God. Male and female, he created them. It's male and female together in the image of God. We're going to talk about image, and we're going to talk about created in a minute. Next, chapter 5 of Genesis. This is the book of the generations of Adam. Are you all happy I didn't put down all the genealogies? I love teaching on genealogies. It's eye-opening, but not for today. But this is the book of the generations of Adam. What book? The book of Genesis. Why are we looking at this? It says, when God created man, he made him in the likeness or image of God. Male and female, he created them. And he blessed them and named them man when they were created. So we're not talking maleness versus femaleness. We're talking about mankind, man, the species that God created, man, man and woman. Next one from Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. Whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed. For God made man in his, God's, image. Okay, I won't read all of the Colossians 3 passages, but perhaps later today you will. Let's drop down to the highlighted part. And it's saying in verse 10, Paul is addressing the church in Colossae, and God is addressing not just the church there, but us as well. And he's talking about people who have sinned, fallen away, but have come back, been renewed by Jesus Christ, which we've started to talk about. And he says, you put on a new self, verse 10, which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its Creator. Renewed in knowledge after the image of its Creator. Scripture. Powerful. All right, let's just back up for a moment. I want to touch on two key words before we move forward. First one is created. Created is different than reproduced. The monks reproduce the Bible by carefully, very carefully, triple, quadruple checking it, copying the scriptures into another document. That is a reproduction. I like Norman Rockwell paintings. I can't have a painting he created. It wouldn't be prudent to spend what limited funds are and go into debt to get one. But I have a few reproductions. There's nothing wrong with reproductions. But the people that did the reproduction are not the creator, right? Norman Rockwell was. Brian has created two wonderful books. These are things that never existed before. He didn't reproduce books. He created a new book that has never existed before. And there'll never be another one exactly like it except through reproduction. Brian is a creator. Many of us have done things in creation. We have created new things. Let me ask you, when you create something, how do you feel about that which you created? Good, huh? Do you take excitement with it? Do you want to show it to people? It's not that I necessarily want somebody saying how wonderful you are. It's that this is wonderful. To go to Brian's books, they're wonderful. Created new things. Now, God created in a unique way. When Brian created, he used things that were already there. I would presume maybe a computer and keyboard and research materials and stuff to create these things. So he took which was and then repurposed them into a new creation. You know what God did? He started with nothing and created everything. You think that's a little different than anything we can create? But how do you think God felt about his creation? 6 days of creation. What did he say at the end of the first one? It is good. At the end of the second day, he said, it is good. At the end of the third day, it is good. At the end of the fourth day, at the end of the fifth day, it is good. At the end of the sixth day, it is very good. Wait a minute, what changed in the sixth day? He created man in the likeness of a dog.
No.
He created man in the likeness of a mountain.
No.
He created man in the likeness, the image of himself, the creator of the entire universe. And on that day, he says, he looks, checks it over, he says, this is not good. This is very good. The creator created man as the culmination of the creation out of nothing. He did not create man by saying, I've got a dog. I think I can improve upon it. I'm going to make it stand upright. Okay, that's an ape. That doesn't quite do it. I'm going to change it and create man. No. He created man in his likeness. Nothing else is in his likeness. Nothing. Now, what did he do with man? Let's go back to verse 26, that first chapter 1, Genesis, verse 26, the very first piece on the handout. He made him in his image after his likeness, and he let them have dominion. What's dominion mean? Rule, authority. Put them in charge of. You have authority. Over what? The fish of the sea. Okay. Birds of the air, or birds of the heavens. Over the livestock and over all the earth. Let me paraphrase that. When he says over all the earth, that's over everything else. You got the birds, you got the fish, and you got everything else. What is this stuff? This stuff is his creation, his pride, his joy. It was good. He is so excited about his creation. And then he creates man in his likeness, in his image, and he puts man in charge of it all. Wow. Why didn't he put a dog in charge of it? Dogs tend to be a little more loyal than some guys and gals. Because he created man. Remember, man is male and female, in his likeness, in his image, and he put man in charge of taking all care of all its creation. One little side note, the environmentalists are almost correct, many of the ones that I've talked to. They want to take care of all of the creation. The problem is they don't remember who the creator was. We are the original environmentalists, we who are followers of the one true God. He put it under our care. We have a responsibility to take care of this world because it's his, and he put us in charge. He created it, and then he created us in his image to take care of it. Isn't that kind of exciting? So don't worry about environmentalists. Go and hug them. They hug trees. I hug environmentalists. I think it's great. I'm excited. Why would God trust me? Maybe you, but why would he trust me with taking care of his world? Because he created us in his image or likeness. All right, let's move over to image and likeness for a moment. This is perhaps the most misunderstood part of Christian scripture. When somebody says to Terry, your granddaughter looks a lot like you. She is in your image. Good thing they didn't say she looks like me. So she looks like Terry. Have you ever seen people and say, oh, you're the spitting image of your grandpa? We have a nephew, Ben. You show a picture of Ben today, he's 18, 19, and a picture of my father when he went into the service, You can't tell the difference, even to the hair. He is in the image. He looks like my father. That's what we think of when we say image. So, do I look like God? What's the Bible say? Has anybody really seen God? So how do you know what his image is? As in, looks like. So we see pictures on the Sistine Chapel of God reaching down and touching Adam. I don't know if that's what God looks like. That's not what image means. Likeness. Being like in the image of God, which is different than anything else in creation. John 4, 1 John 4, John's first letter, not the gospel. Somewhere around verse 5 says, God is love. So this face doesn't look like God, but what is God like? What are we in the image of? Love. Love. God is love. If we are made in his likeness, we are made to be loving creatures. And we are given authority over all the world to work like God in love to take care of the world and each other. As his delegates to the universe that he created. Now, when he created one little side issue, he didn't create it and walk away. He isn't gone. Because he created us in his likeness, and he's working with us to accomplish his goals. All right, so we get to love. The image that we're talking about, and God's talking about, is we are created in the image of God, so we're created in the image of love. I'm told by Greek-speaking experts that there's 8 words in the Greek language for love. How many words for love are there in the English language? 1. Now, the ones in the Greek language mean different things. There's a couple of them I'll bring up, like eros love. That's the intimate, affectionate love that one person has for his wife or her husband. It is the intimate, close, physical relationship. There's filial. Philadelphia comes from that. Filial means brotherly love. But that's loving people you're familiar with that are either part of your immediate family or church family. I'll tell you, it's easy for me to have familial love for all of you. You're wonderful. I love loving you. It's great. People that I get to meet, I love them all until they show me that they don't deserve my love, and then I don't love them anymore. That's familial love. Even within the family, there's some times when we can slip, and we're going to talk about why and such in a minute. But that's not God's love, not the encompassing agape love of God that we are given initially in the Garden of Eden. This isn't about me showing my love to you. It does not have anything to do with the object of my affection, love. No. It is the unwarranted, unconditional, unmitigated, caring, loving, wanting to be supportive, encouragement for all, regardless of whether they are, in my mind, worthy or not. All right. I've already said it's easy for me to love you. Are there some people that are popping up in your mind that it's not so easy to love? Where you would want to support, encourage, care about, and take care of, that maybe you don't really want to? Let me just give you one quick example. We are called, back up one step, Jesus was asked, what are the greatest commandments? What's the greatest commandment? What did he say? Love the Lord your God with? All your heart, soul, and mind. Not some of it, all of it. Okay? And then he didn't just stop there. He said, the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then you get into the whole question, what's a neighbor? That's everybody. Is there anybody that God is calling us to not love? With agape love. Total love. Unconditional. okay, this world is a little challenging right now. Don't turn on the TV when you go home. Can you honestly say you love Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff, Donald Trump, and a host of others? Unconditionally. I don't care what your real thinking is about what's right or what's wrong. I'm called to love all of them. What does that mean? It means that I don't start saying bad things about one of them to others. You know, this John Smith character, he's no good. You know, I got to tell you, you really shouldn't be having anything to do with John Smith. He's terrible. He's awful. I don't like him. Yeah. Am I showing love for John Smith when I go behind his back and tell people bad things? Even if they're true? No. Love is unconditional, unmerited. John Smith may not deserve my love from a human perspective. Who created John Smith? Who created everything, including me, and has shown unmerited, unconditional love? Corey's already started talking about it, and next week and the week after, with our next two articles, we're going to be hearing about Jesus Christ and the love of God. Last thing before I get off of the love part for a moment, I keep hearing the word sacrificial love. All right. I'll love John Smith, sacrificially. See what it's costing me? That makes me really good, because I can love John Smith, and you can't. So I'm better than you, and I'm a lot better than him, because I love him. So there. And when I throw the mic on the ground, that makes it even better. Okay, so now I have sacrificial love. Sacrificial means all about me. Does sacrificial love have any bearing with God? Is it about me and my sacrifices? No. God doesn't ask us to make sacrifices. He wants us to give freely. See, here's where we got tripped up, and we're going to move into that in just a moment. The trip up is love is about others. It's not about me. Love is about others. Not what it costs me, what my relationship is, what I'm doing. It is about others. It's not about me. I can't say, I want to get married because I love Terry and she makes me feel good as a person. Oh, maybe she doesn't make me feel so good anymore, so I'm going to divorce her and go find somebody else that makes me happier. Right? Isn't that what's going on in society? We were at dinner last night with a family, and there's a gal there who has a wonderful son, Carson. He's about a year and a half old. And, you know, a year and a half old make you laugh. Boy, does he make you laugh. It's a lot of fun. She is living with Carson's father. So I did say something like, so how come you're staying with him? Oh, he makes me feel good. So what if he doesn't make you feel good? Oh, I'll leave him in a heartbeat. They aren't married. They believe that life and love and relationships are all about how it makes me feel. My decisions are about me first, and love is about how I feel in love. That's not what God's talking about. It's not that someone deserves love. It's that, and it's not just that I'm commanded to love, although I am. It is a wonderful responsibility to give love. One last story, some of you have heard it. My mom, years ago, was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And she lived for 18 months, had a wonderful attitude about life, visiting the children, grandchildren. She just loved being there, but she also knew where she was going after. But she reached the point she could not get up and go upstairs to bed. She couldn't do much of anything for herself, physically weak, and the disease was destroying her body. My father, who was a very active outdoors person, He had ridden his bicycle from here and he went down to Disney World when he was 69 years old after triple heart bypass. And he was planning the trip out to Disneyland, you know, with panniers on, sleeping on the side of the road, cooking his own meals on a little Bunsen burner type contraption. That all went away, and I found out afterwards he put a sleeping bag on the floor next to my mother's couch where she was, so he could put his hand on her stomach. You know why? His hearing was even worse than mine, although it's getting there, Terry, my hearing. So that if Mom needed him, she could jiggle his hand when he's asleep, because that's the only way he would know that she needed him when he was sleeping. He did that for almost a year. After she died, I said, Dad, you just showed me true love, the sacrifice. And that's as far as I got. I said, sacrifice? Don't you ever say I sacrificed for your mother. The greatest glory I ever had was dealing and serving and helping her. And if I could just get one more day of sleeping next to her with my hand, I would do anything to have it. He did not consider his love for her sacrificial. It was love of the agape type. Was she making him feel good? Cooking meals, doing his wash, doing, you know, all the things that... No. You know where his joy was in serving and giving, not on what he was getting. Oh, you want to talk about a life lesson out of the Bible, which is lived out by a person in your life? That just blew me away. Here, I'm so proud of my father being sacrificial. Not to him. In fact, at her funeral, Dad and I did the funeral. We wanted to sing the song Amazing Grace. He wouldn't let us sing the first verse. You know what the first verse says? Saved a wretch like me. He said, your mom was not a wretch. I'm a wretch, he said. She's not. So when he died a year later, and I did the funeral for him, we sang the first verse. But I'm telling you, agape love, the love of the Father, and what we are created in the image of for God the Father is absolutely amazing. This is what we are to do. We are to love everyone, not based on what it does for or against us, but because it is the fulfillment of being created in the image of God.